Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Whether you're not, you're nice this Christmas, chances are high that you ended up with a book voucher at the end of your stocking. Now, in terms of music memoirs and biographies, there are some awful ones and some really outstanding ones. So Alan Carr from the RTE Entertainment website is on the line now to recommend the cream of the music biography crop to spend your Christmas vouchers on. Alan, you're very welcome to the programme. And the music biography really is a literary form unto itself, isn't it?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, there are a dazzling number of books out there, Cormac, written about music stars, and some of them are very, very good, and some of them are downright terrible. And boy, are there a hell of a lot of them. I mean, from the most famous ones like Hammer of the Gods, which is the hair-raising and very unofficial account of Led Zeppelin, to The Dirt, which is the eye-popping account of Motley Crue, the music biography is endlessly entertaining. And as you say, as a literary form, you know, it really is a kind of an industry in itself. So I suppose usefully you could divide them into three categories: the classics, the ones we never asked for, and the dull and cynical cash-ins. And they're also the ones that we really badly want. I mean, the rumours are very strong that Bono has been busy over the past couple of years penning his autobiography, and that one I'd like to read. But I think the best rock biogs are the rags to riches stories, you know, the ones that are full of sex and drugs and rock and roll. And also, you know, they're also redemption tales, I suppose, and they usually feature a good deal of score settling and setting the record straight in an age of, you know, PR spin and closely curated social media accounts. So they have their uses, and they're always, mostly always, very entertaining.
Now, do you normally prefer an autobiography, or do you prefer something? Because, you know, an autobiography, the person who's writing it are in charge of the image that they're putting out to the world. But sometimes a biography is written by somebody from afar, like a journalist like yourself, can get the warts and all. What's your preference, generally speaking? I suppose it depends on the honesty of the person writing the book.
Well, absolutely. I think it hinges on that. I mean, there are good examples of both, you know, rock music biographies and autobiographies. I mean, Mariah Carey, for example, put out a very entertaining biography this year, autobiography, The Meaning of Mariah Carey, which came at the whole idea at a fairly bleak angle. Now, how revelationary it was, I'm not really that sure because I haven't actually read it yet. Mark Lanegan, he put out a very good autobiography this year, Sing Backwards and Weep, which you've probably read, actually.
I'd say it's pretty... I haven't read it. I'm a fan of Mark Lanegan, but I can only imagine it's quite grim in parts.
Scabrously honest, Cormac. Scabrously honest, as you'd expect from the great Mark Lanegan. So I think if you're talking about someone like Bob Dylan, he wrote his brilliant, fabulous autobiography, Chronicles, back in 2004. And then you have, you know, the likes of Johnny Rogan, who wrote the infamous Severed Alliances account of Johnny Marr and Morrissey from the Smiths, which was one of my favourite music books of all time. So there are good examples of both genres, whether it's a biography from afar or whether it's an autobiographical account by the artists themselves. Chronicles by Dylan, which came out in 2004, is absolutely extraordinary. Now, as we know, there's a whole publishing industry dedicated to books about Bob, and Dylanologists have been kind of poring over his career for, you know, a long time. I mean, like, just a quick glance online, there's 100 books, over 100 books about Dylan, but I think that Chronicles really was the mother lode when it arrived in 2004. And it's written in this kind of very strange, almost dreamlike, fragmentary, kind of impressionistic way. It's a kind of a flick through the man's back pages by the man himself. And we learn stuff like, you know, he was a huge fan of wrestling when he was a kid, which makes a lot of sense to me. And he kind of adroitly sidesteps that voice of a generation millstone with the pithy line, "I was more a cowpuncher than a Pied Piper." So that's an excellent kind of example of a very good music autobiography, as is Moby. Moby had some terrific books over the past couple of years.
I read both.
Very, very candid.
I read both those volumes, and they're tomes, and you don't have to be a Moby fan to like them. You don't have to know anything about the music. Before I read these books, I believed Moby to be a very sensible, vegan, you know, very, very simple living person. But his life went all over the place in terms of excess, near-death experiences.
Exactly.
It's just unbelievable.
And I think that's the wicked fun of the Moby books, is that you'd expect him to be this retiring nerd, and he looks like a retiring nerd, but that's the wicked joy of the books, that it's just not what you're expecting from this guy who is a vegan, kind of non-drinker, et cetera, et cetera, now, but what a life he has led.
And two volumes about Moby. Like, he's not exactly the most interesting man that you could think about. Like, he's not Bob Dylan. He's not Bono. And you say Bono's been busy penning his own autobiography. And that's actually happening, is it? Because, you know, there's nothing written by one of the members.
Well, I've heard nothing official about it, but I have heard various things over the past couple of years in particular about Bono writing his book, and I'd expect that to be a very good read. I mean, there are a lot of books about U2, The Unforgettable Fire, which is Eamon Dunphy's almost infamous book about the band in 1988, which, if I recall, the band themselves weren't terribly happy with. And the story goes that when the manager, Paul McGuinness, approached Dunphy to write it, Dunphy replied, "I don't know anything about UB40. So he came at it completely cold. In terms of U2, if you're talking about U2, I'd really recommend U2 by U2, which is written with Neil McCormick. It's a huge coffee table book with some amazing art and pictures, but it's also searingly honest. And it's great, very refreshing to see a band at, you know, U2's level being that honest and open about everything. So a lot of U2 books, but I would definitely recommend U2 by U2.
So what's on your list then of music biography recommendations for those people with those vouchers that are sitting at home and they need to get rid of them? Give us an idea of what... Say people who don't have racks of stuff. You know, if this is going to be the first, your first kind of dipping your toe into the world of music biographies, where do you need to go? Is it Hammer of the Gods? Is it The Dirt by Motley Crue? What do we need to look at?
Both Hammer of the Gods and The Dirt about Motley Crue are obviously classics, and they're almost yardsticks. Hammer of the Gods, in particular, when it came out in 1985, was eye-popping stuff, as
this
I
is
said.
For Led Zeppelin.
Yes, the Led Zeppelin one. I would go for the Bruce Springsteen book, Born to Run, which came out in 2016. Really, really excellent book, written by the man himself. It's 500 pages long, and it took him 7 years to write it. And the fact that he wrote it in longhand and notebooks, I think, adds to the charm. Now, I'm not the biggest Bruce fan in the world. He's like Stonehenge to me, Cormac. I admire him from afar. Mm-hmm. But even for non-Bruce fans, this is very, very good. It's very honest about his battle with depression and his very strange relationship with his father, Douglas. So it's a rock autobiography, but it's also an account of a voyage around his father.
Yeah, I read the book myself, because I don't read millions of these books, but Bruce Springsteen's one. And like you, I admire Bruce from afar. I think he's brilliant, but like, it's not totally my thing. But I thought there was a good passage in there when he's in a hotel in Dublin playing at the RDS, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, and he can't get out of bed because he's feeling too depressed. And this is happening in Dublin. And I may or may not have been at that gig. I'm not, because I've seen him a few times at the RDS. But I what I liked about Bruce's book as well even though his life is something you can't relate to, you could relate to his struggles in life. And I think that's what's so good about the good books, is that sometimes you go, these people are the people we admired, are celebrities, we want to have their lives. But when you actually break it down and they tell you about their lives in raw detail, you realise, geez, do you know what? You can keep it. I don't want to have any of that.
Absolutely.
It sounds terrible.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, he kept his depression, you know, to himself. The only person who knew about it was John Landau, who is his manager. He didn't tell the rest of the band. So this was him coming out, as it were, about his struggles with depression. And that's what makes the book so excellent. And it's so well written as well. And it's like Richard Ford meets Cormac McCarthy meets John Steinbeck. He is a very, very good writer. Another one I definitely recommend, just for the pure bitchiness of it all, is Autobiography by Morrissey. And I love that title, Autobiography. Now, as we know, Moz has, let's say, fallen from grace in recent years. And I'm not remotely surprised by some of his more recent outbursts. But this is a hugely entertaining read. It came out in 2013. And it's a very dense book. It's 450 pages long. There are no chapters in it and no pictures. And it is extraordinarily churlish and contrary and, you know, waspishly funny.
And does he grind axes? Does he name names?
Does he grind axes? This is Morrissey. Absolutely. He names names. I think the most curious thing about it is, I think he spends something like 22 pages on the Smiths. and he spends what seems like hundreds of pages on his various court battles over the years. So yes, he does very much grind axes. It's like peering into his teenage diary. A highlight of the book for me was Morrissey having breakfast with his hero David Bowie. And in the book, Moss writes, David quietly tells me, you know, I've had so much sex and drugs, I can't believe I'm still alive. And I loudly tell him, you know, I've had so little sex and drugs, I can't believe I'm still alive. So it's full of those kind of nice bon mots and one-liners that Morrissey's famous for.
Is it shot through with just hate?
No, I wouldn't. I think that's unfair. It's shot through with, you know, as I say, washbish. Miss Moneypenny, sounds like Sean Connery there, a very bitchy sense of humour that we've come to expect from Morrissey. And I think that kind of the alternative to that is Johnny Marr's excellent autobiography that came out about 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, Set the Boy Free.
So is Johnny Marr, you know, his sparring partner, well, kind of a sparring partner in The Smiths.
That's right, yeah. So this is very much in contrast to Moz's slice of self-misery lit. And Marr, who is, I don't know if you've ever met Johnny Marr, he's just one of the coolest, nicest person in rock and roll. He really captures the joy of music itself, and he puts music front and centre in a very simply straightforward written book. It's a very humble tale of his background in Manchester via Kildare, of course, to his current status as a guitar godhead. And he maintains his modesty and ineffable cool throughout the whole thing. So it's just this elegant, zen-like, serene read in sharp contrast to Morrissey's more miserable tract, I think.
And tell us about Lily Allen's book, because I read that one as well. And again, you do not have to be a fan of her music to be interested in this one.
Well, I am a fan of Lily Allen's music.
Oh, I am, to a degree as well.
I don't think you need to be a fan. No, this is perhaps the most rock and roll biography of all time, and certainly one of the most rock and roll biographies on this list. It's almost worryingly candid. I mean, Lily Allen has made a career about being kind of very honest in her songs. And this, you know, she acknowledges herself that she might come across as a whining rich girl pop star. But as you say there about kind of once you see into the lives that these people live, you mightn't kind of desire it that hanker after it yourself that much. I mean, it's all about her troubled childhood, her disastrous relationships, her miscarriages, and the extraordinary saga that she had with a stalker that went on for several years. And she couldn't seem to do anything about it because the police were so, you know, unhelpful. It's bluntly honest and very, very funny. But as I say, almost worryingly candid. Very, very good book.
I sort of found when I was reading it that I was on her side for a lot of the book, and she was going through a lot of troubles that she was blaming. And then I sort of felt towards the end that she was really blaming absolutely everybody else, never took any responsibility for some of the troubles that she was experiencing in her own life.
Yep.
And I got a bit sick of that, about her own levels of self-pity and pointing the finger at everybody else. Maybe that's just me, but as the book wore on, I started to feel that way about her.
That's interesting, because I think that she acknowledges that from the outset, and throughout the book she does stop herself and she does kind of speak directly to the reader and say, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, given her kind of own travails with kind of mental health, I think that, you know, the fact that she acknowledges that tends to kind of dilute the fact that she might come across as self-pitying. I think she's very self-aware, put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, she's still to be admired, and it's an absolutely wonderful
read.
It's a page, you won't go to sleep until you finish the book. So I'll tell you what we'll do. The top three, if you could only have three books, right, in the music biography genre, as it were, what would they be and why would that be?
Well, it's a very hard choice to make. I mean, some excellent books came out this year. Peter Perfidy's, excuse me if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, brought out a very good book called Broken Greek, which isn't exactly a music biog. It's his account of moving from Greece with his parents back in the 70s and how he grew up around rock and roll. And that's a real insight into the music industry. I would definitely recommend the Morrissey book. Recommend the Bruce book and the Springsteen book. And it's interesting about the Beatles, because I mean the amount of books about the Beatles is, you know, runs into the,
like, what are you going to do there? Like, I've never read a book about the Beatles, so I don't want to read 10 before I get to one that's good. Can you tell me
you could obviously
I
start
need to read
Shout by Philip Norman is seen as the definitive biography, which came out in 1981. It's been, you know, updated several times since. That's Shout by Philip Norman. One of my favourite Beatle books is Ian MacDonald's Revolution in the Head. It's not quite a biography. It's a track by track breakdown of all their 186 recorded songs. And there are a lot of very good books about the Beatles after the breakup. I liked You Never Give Me Your Money, which is an account of the almost Shakespearean personal battles between John and Paul and the legal and financial kind of war that kind of erupted and almost tainted their legacy after they broke up. Albert Goldman's book about John Lennon was very controversial, and I remember liking that. But the one that I think real Beatles fans will go for is probably Mark Lewisham's mammoth three-part Beatle biography. The first part came out a few years ago. I think about 8 years ago at this stage, is called Tune In. And the interesting one about that one, Cormac, is that this is a very big book. It's nearly 1,000 pages long. And at the end of the actual kind of chapters themselves, before the kind of appendices and indexes, we reach page 840. And the band are only leaving Hamburg for the last time. Gosh. So that will give you an idea of how detailed this
is. Is it written in real time or something? And then
no,
they got up
written,
and had their breakfast.
No, it's not written in real time. It's just so incredibly detailed that they're only leaving Hamburg for the last time in 1962. So we've got a lot of ground to cover, and we're already 840 pages in. I think a very good book I definitely recommend is Paul McCartney, Many Years From Now, which came out in 1997. And that was written by Beatles confidant Barry Miles. And it's accounts of Paul's life with the Beatles. It's an authorised biography. But one of the funniest kind of scenes is Macca relates the tale of how that after they recorded Can't Buy Me Love, the band had a 9-day orgy with Miami Beach hookers. So that's kind of an interesting one. And in the book, Morrissey quips, it should have been Can't Buy Me Love, which I thought was quite funny. So he's not quite the angel that you might think him to be. And it's a very honest book and a very funny book as well. So I definitely recommend that.
And I remember reading a book called Kill Your Friends a number of years ago.
Oh, John Niven.
Yeah, and it was kind of fantastic. it was about more about the music industry and how terribly awful mm-hmm. it was behind the curtain. Is there any particular book that you would recommend that might encapsulate the music industry in terms of how nasty it can be.
There's so many of them. The Music Insider book, the John Niven book, of course, is a novel. It's loosely based on a person in the music industry whose name shall remain nameless for the moment. But the Music Insider book is really, really great fun. Sometimes because these people are not burdened by the ego of rock stars, and sometimes because they're more burdened by ego than the stars they represent. One I recently really enjoyed was Lunch with the Wild Frontiers, a history of Britpop and excess in 13 and a half chapters by Phil Savage. I don't know if you remember Phil Savage, who was the PR guru back in the 1990s in London. You might have come across him yourself.
Yeah, he rings a bell, all right. He wouldn't answer my calls.
Yes, that was another person. Savage and Best was the name of the PR company, and they represented everyone back in the day. Other classics of the insider book genre include Danny Sugarman's brain-fried account of the 60s in LA, Wonderland Avenue. There's also a chap called Walter Yetenkoff, who wrote a book called Howling at the Moon, which is an insider account of the extraordinary excesses of corporate rock back in the 1980s, when record companies actually had money. And I remember interviewing Walter Yetkinoff when that book came out. And I must say, he was a larger-than-life character. Another very good book is The Last Party, Britpop Blair and the Demise of English Rock by John Harris, which was published in 2004. And it puts the Britpop wars into a political and cultural context. Now, if that sounds very dull, don't worry, because the author really does sling the mud in the Blur Oasis feud. So there are a huge amount of insider books, but those are three or four that I really, really enjoyed.
Well, look, it's a comprehensive list and the list goes on, and I wouldn't like to be one of your shelves because I'd be collapsing right now, judging by the amount, even the amount of books on the Beatles that you have is kind of frightening. But listen, Alan Corr of the RTE Entertainment website, thank you very much for joining us to chat about some of the best music biographies to spend those Christmas vouchers on this year.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.